Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First today in Israel, it's been reported in the last half an hour that the Security Cabinet has begun its meeting to vote on the Gaza ceasefire deal. Now, early this morning, after a last-minute delay, Benjamin Netanyahu's office said the Israeli negotiating team confirmed that the deal has been finalised and said approval was imminent. Now, in a moment, I'll speak to James Elder from UNICEF and Dr. Walt Kilroy, who's lecturer in international relations at DCU. Let's get the very latest, though, now. I'm joined on the line by Leila Molana Allen, who's special correspondent with PBS. Good morning to you, Leila.
Morning, Claire.
I see in the last couple of minutes that the Israeli Prime Minister's office, Benjamin Netanyahu's office, is saying that the first hostages will be released or are expected to be released on Sunday. So can we take this as confirmation that the deal is done?
The deal is not completely done. So this meeting that's happening today is with the Security Cabinet. Now, Netanyahu is facing severe opposition from some of the most right-wing members of his cabinet, including Itamar Ben-Gvir, who is the National Security Minister. He has said this is a deal which will put all Israelis in danger, which gives up all the gains of the war, which he says were gained with Israeli blood, and that he will resign if this deal goes through. So he's facing intense opposition there. After that, the deal then has to go through a full cabinet meeting on Saturday night, but that will be a little bit more of a prerequisite if it's agreed to in this. And then that would mean that the deal starts on Sunday. If that's the case, as has always been agreed, the first hostages would immediately be released on the first day of the deal, which would be Sunday. We're looking at either three or four hostages being released from this group of confirmed 33 hostages. Now, that's about a third of the hostages that are left in the country. But we do also know that about a third of those hostages are dead. So it's unclear whether this will be all living hostages, some bodies. They are going to prioritise the remaining children and elderly and wounded and women.
Mm-hmm. So the prospect then of it getting through the Security Cabinet, then the full Cabinet ministry meeting. I mean, even if we do have some resignations, what is the likelihood, the breakdown of the numbers of it going through, regardless of what Itamar Ben-Gvir does?
It seems extremely likely that it will go through, in part because it was agreed to. I mean, what's been so clear in these negotiations is that this is the same deal that President Biden proposed in May last year. And what's very clear is that President Biden sent his envoy, Brett McGurk, but so did incoming President Trump, sent Steve Witnitz. And what's been very clear is that unlike Biden, who refused to lean on Netanyahu, Trump's envoy has turned around and said, listen, this deal is happening. You need to agree to it. And I want to be very clear that you will not be given concessions by President Trump if he comes in and you still haven't agreed to a deal. Trump has long famously said, I don't like war. It's bad for business. He wants this wrapped up before he comes in. And he still gets credit for it. So it's clear that enough pressure has been applied that this does have to go through now, even though if several right-wing ministers leave this government, that puts Netanyahu's power in serious jeopardy. And of course, there have been many, many protests on the streets desperate for this deal so the hostages come home, but many protests as well against this deal from people who believe that none of the IDF troops should be leaving the Gaza Strip until Hamas is completely defeated. And of course, we're seeing very standard behavior here from the IDF. We saw the same thing in Lebanon. Mm. As the ceasefire deal comes in, the latest figures we're getting from civil defense, more than 100 people killed in Gaza since the ceasefire deal was announced, 27 of those children. These are going to be very difficult days for people on the ground in Gaza running up to Sunday.
Yeah, we heard from a medical director of one of the last remaining medical facilities in northern Gaza yesterday, and he was explaining to us that these days, the last hours before this ceasefire deal, are the most dangerous. Will you explain that to us? Has it something to do with people being able to see very clearly that the ceasefire has happened? Therefore, in the eyes of the perpetrators, it has to get worse before it gets better.
It's not exactly that. It's that there's now a ticking clock, right? So in terms of what Israel believes its war goals are, it's now under pressure. This happens every time there is any sort of ceasefire deal. As I say, you know, I was on the ground during the war in Lebanon at the end of last year, and those last 24 hours, you know, about 25% of the damage that was done to the capital of Beirut was done in those last 24 hours. You know, there's celebration and then people are running in the streets screaming because there's a massive new wave of airstrikes. I was speaking to people in Gaza the night after the ceasefire deal was agreed, and they were saying, you know, we were out in the streets celebrating and then running for cover because the level of attacks that came in that night, that came in last night, again, you know, people are really kind of counting down the clock and saying, God, we've survived more, you know, more than a year of this war. I pray we survived the last 48 hours. That's because the idea here is that now that it's been agreed and the IDF doesn't know if it will be able to continue hitting what it considers its targets, they want to cram in as much as possible mm-hmm. into that last period until they are no longer allowed to strike. Because, of course, after Sunday, any strike that takes place will then potentially be considered a violation of the deal. So it's almost like they just try and sweep through as much as they can. But, of course, the impact of that on civilians, particularly in this moment where they finally feel, with nearly 47,000 people dead, that they might now have survived this war, to be potentially, you know, under that pressure in the next few days is horrifying.
And Leila, people will have been struck if they saw the news last night at the number of protests, you know, how well attended they were in Israel last night and over the course of yesterday in opposition to this deal. How do you assess the level of opposition to this deal going through amongst the people in Israel?
So here is the issue. You know, Benjamin Netanyahu is more unpopular than potentially any leader in Israel has ever been. However, there are lots of different opinions about why he is so unpopular. So there are many people who feel that he has played this completely wrong, that he has not prioritized the hostages, that he has prioritized flattening Gaza and his war goals and playing into the hands of those right-wing members of his cabinet, who, of course, 2 years ago were the reason he was able, nearly 3 years ago now, to make that cabinet in the first place, because he couldn't bring that together himself. So some people believe that that's the reason why many of these hostages have died in captivity, because he should have made a deal immediately to get them back. Other people believe he hasn't gone hard enough in Gaza and that he should have done even more to completely eliminate Hamas root and tail. Of course, we know that's impossible. And already we know there are nearly as many new Hamas recruits as those who've been killed during this war. Because, of course, that is exactly how Hamas recruits people, is look at the devastation around you. Look at what these people have done to your home. Look at all your family members they've killed. Come and fight with us. So it's a fantastic recruiting tool. Then there are the people who essentially feel that the reason this happened in the first place is Benjamin Netanyahu's entire kind of, you know, move towards the right and his methodology of doing that. And that's why these attacks happened. That's why this war started. And then there are those who are incredibly angry that their children are fighting in the IDF in a war they don't believe in. Mm-hmm. So there's such a spectrum of opinion. And so it's not necessarily just that people are specifically angry about this deal, it's that they're angry at him in general. And so you've got so many different groups of protesters coming together. The reality is that everyone in Israel's priority is the hostages. The hostages are this national symbol. I mean, when you walk around any major Israeli city, there are posters everywhere. There are lit up screens. People still gather in the squares every Saturday night after Shabbat. And two of the most symbolic are these children, the Bibas children, Kfir and his older brother Ariel. Kfir's birthday, his second birthday, is going to be on Saturday. He was just 8 months old when he was kidnapped. We don't know if those children are alive. They are the youngest hostages inside Gaza. And Hamas say that they were killed by an airstrike in Israel early on, but there hasn't been confirmation of that. Many people saying, you know, if those children come out as bodies, the overwhelming uprising against both Netanyahu and Hamas will be uncontainable. So there is an unimaginable amount of emotion right now on the streets of Israel about this deal. Mm.
Leila, thank you very much for taking us through it all. Leila Malala Allen there from PBS. James Elder is with us now too, UNICEF Global spokesperson. James, you're welcome to the programme. I know that you've been on the ground with UNICEF for almost the entirety of this war. And in the last couple of minutes, we have the World Health Organization saying that it will be possible to ramp up aid to 600 trucks a day into Gaza if the new routes and crossings are opened. Do you agree with that assessment, that once this deal is struck, if it happens on Sunday, that the change in the level of aid getting in will be immediate?
It will. The intention is there, Claire. I mean, obviously, the UN, UNICEF, WHO, everyone is ready and determined to do whatever is humanly possible to get in as much humanitarian aid as we can in the time frame. Now, that's a reason why we need this deal to start quickly and to go for many, many, many months, go for years. It cannot just be a short-term thing. 600 trucks, which is what the deal points to, is 1,000% increase on what's been happening so far. So for this to happen, we have to see more than signatures on a paper. You know, we are going to need significant removal of security and political obstacles. We're going to need guarantees of safe, unhindered access. All these things we've been asking for a long, long time, Claire, and they've been absent. We're going to need an increase in medical evacuations. We're going to need expedited visas. We're going to need more access points, you know, removal of rubble. So there's a huge amount that needs to be done. The fact is, it's a cause for celebration. When it happens, because as we just heard from your correspondent there, you know, we are still seeing dozens and dozens of children killed. But when I speak to people in Gaza, as I do every single day, there is joy. There is absolutely is. But they're also very conscious that they are living in tents and they will return to tents. I know doctors who go and work 18 hours a day, Claire, but they live in tents. So that's the aid environment that we're working in. Nothing will be straightforward, but the preparations have been going on for a long, long time because this should have happened a long, long time ago.
And the trucks are lined up and ready to go. I was watching on the BBC last night. They are queuing at the border, ready to go in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, UNICEF's priorities have always been, you know, even with the restrictions that have been placed on them, on us, restrictions, Claire, that have been lethal. We have started to see children dying of hypothermia and of malnutrition. So our focus will remain a massive scallop of medicine, of nutritional food, because around 95% of people there are in a nutritional crisis, of fuel. Fuel is what allows surgeons to operate with lights. Fuel is what allows water desalination plants to pump water. You've got around 25% capacity. People urgently need water. And then it is things like blankets and tents. It's still cold in Gaza. People have been living like this for far, far too long. And for UNICEF, you know, yes, of course, they sound to people like the life-saving support needed, and they are. But for us, it's also things like wheelchairs. It's prosthetics. It's getting children to some type of education. We are in uncharted territory when it comes to the trauma of every single girl and boy in Gaza. There is nothing, there is no exaggeration in that. We certainly wish it wasn't the case, but we've never seen a conflict zone like this one as violent where no one can leave. I mean, Claire, I was there in March last year when we looked like having a ceasefire, the last serious, how seriously close we were. And I remember a mother of a nine-year-old saying, tonight, this was March 2024, tonight I can promise my nine-year-old that she will go to bed and wake up. Now, of course, that ceasefire was blown out of the water. So there is a level of trauma that even child psychologists in Gaza don't really understand how deep it is. And they fear it will worsen in the coming weeks when children do go home and when they do see their rubble. So there's an enormous amount to do. There's an enormous amount of commitment from Palestinian aid workers, from the United Nations. But as I say, now we need to see that commitment from the signatories of this to remove the security and political obstacles that we have dealt with far too long.
Now, Hamas has just said that the issues regarding the ceasefire deal have been resolved today. So things seem to be moving, hopefully, towards this point on Sunday. You mentioned fuel, though, as being one of the crucial elements of aid that needs to get in, James. There were severe restrictions on fuel, weren't there, over the course of this last 15 months? And I'm wondering, are you getting any detail on whether those restrictions will be lifted or how this whole thing is going to work logistically?
It's a great question. Yes and no. I mean, we've made it very clear from the highest levels of the United Nations about what the priorities are, and fuel is absolutely one of those. So that has to be a cornerstone of this agreement. And you're right, we had restrictions not only on fuel, we have restrictions on oxygen cylinders, we have restrictions on antibiotics, on all types of things that are both life-saving, but also there are absolutely no reasons that they can't get into the population. We haven't really seen, Claire, previously, the kind of restrictions on humanitarian aid, remembering for a population not over one of the most ferocious bombardments in living memory, but a population that couldn't leave. And I just don't have an historical precedent of that. So in terms of the detail, and the devil is always in the detail, but I know from the highest levels, from the Secretary General of the UN, they've made it very clear. This is about fuel. This is about medicines. This is also about medical evacuations of children getting out. And that's also something that's been reduced by around 90% since the Rafah crossing closed. So There's a huge amount to do. There is joy on the streets. People just want an end to the bombardment. But yes, we have an enormous amount to do. And as the Secretary General said, Claire, we need to make sure as well in this agreement that the efforts by the UN are matched by the private sector. There's hundreds of trucks will need to come in there as well. So those removal of obstacles, opening of entry points. We've said that from day one. It's the most efficient way, the quickest way, the cheapest way to get life-saving aid to people is through entry points coming from Israel as the occupying power that they have a legal obligation to do. The idea that we've been restricted to a couple of those has again cost lives. So some of this sounds very complicated. Some of this can be solved with will.
James, thank you very much. James Elder there, UNICEF spokesperson. And let's go to Walt Kilroy now, Dr. Walt Kilroy, who's co-director of the DCU Conflict Institute. Good morning, Walt.
Good morning, Claire.
I suppose we have the joy and the hope that James was telling us about, coupled with the scale of what's facing both UNICEF and other organisations, not to mention the population there. You know, James mentioning people who may be allowed to return back to their local area just to see the rubble that's been left in the wake of this war.
I mean, even if this does go ahead, and like we're all crossing our fingers and hoping that the deal is approved and is then implemented, implementing it being, of course, the even harder part, as George Mitchell noted, the situation on the ground is absolutely appalling. It's not just the physical rebuilding, which, you know, people are talking about tens of billions and decades to achieve. That's the hardware, but the level of trauma in the population is just extraordinary. And Leila was talking about the whole question of this war having acted as a recruiting agent for Hamas. Now Hamas is very, very much, to use the military term, degraded. Its leadership has been killed, and the numbers of fighters has been reduced drastically. But if we look at one figure that I saw recently, that previously about half of Hamas militants were actually orphans from previous Israeli strikes in Gaza. So we can look at this on a number of levels. There's the immediate humanitarian needs, which James has described so well, and it's not just getting the aid in; it's being able to move it around safely within within Gaza. There's the physical reconstruction: power, water, sewage, health facilities. Even before you get to talk about education and housing, but on the psychological level as well, the damage is appalling. And I'm not going to suggest for a moment, by the way, that trauma only exists on one side. Of course, there is trauma on the Israeli side, and indeed on the side of the IDF, the people who were involved in what have clearly been war crimes. They actually end up carrying trauma as well themselves.
Now, I see the World Health Organization is saying in the last few minutes again that their plan is to bring in prefabricated hospitals into Gaza in the next 2 months. So obviously they're very hopeful that this peace, if it happens, this ceasefire, will survive. But this is a very complex situation and very unstable, and will continue to be unstable regardless of whether this deal happens on Sunday or not.
Yes, it will. And it has to be it is being very, very carefully sequenced. We're operating in an environment where there is very, very little trust and also not a great deal of political will. I mean, the political situation has been described very well with members of the Israeli Israeli cabinet have indicated or have said they will resign, whether they'll ultimately vote against a government in a vote of confidence they seem to be wavering on that now. But the political will, it's not evident. It's taken ultimately pressure, ironically, from the incoming Trump administration, since the Biden administration never really used the levers that it had available to it in terms of arms supplies. But we're in a situation with very little trust and very little and kind of questionable political will. So the way that's dealt with is you've got very, very careful sequencing. And we can look back to the previous ceasefire in November. It seems like so many years ago, in November of 2023, just 6 weeks after the initial attack and Israeli response. And what happened there, that ceasefire ran for ultimately for 7 days. It got renewed a number of times. And each day, each 24-hour period, there were a number of hostages released and a number of Palestinian prisoners. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't as if each side had to take a leap in the dark and trust that the other would respond. Very careful sequencing, watching very carefully about violations of the ceasefire, but in particular, the whole optics of seeing hostages and prisoners being released.
Okay, well, look, it's a developing situation, and we will keep an eye on what is happening over the course of the morning as the Israeli Security Cabinet continues its meeting. Dr. Walt Kilroy, thank you very much for joining us. Coming up next, ructions over top-up pay for junior ministers and speaking time for government-supporting TDs. Plus, should adults who are living at home be paying rent?
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.